No one can keep a secret forever. Margaret Barbera holds down a job as a skilled accountant. But her most private desires are anything but expected.
This was a particularly potent secret because it involved something taboo.
Margaret works for Irwin and Madeline Margulies, who run a very successful business.
Well, for them, it was probably the time of their lives, and they acted like it. They weren't hiding the money under their pillowcases.
But together, they're hiding more secrets than you can count.
They would be hugely embarrassed, probably have to move, relocate, and start life all over again.
The best way to have a secret is never to tell anybody anything. Once you release a secret, it can take you anywhere.
Eventually, every dirty little secret will be revealed. In the spring of 1982, Irwin and Madeline Margulies seem to have finally fulfilled a lifelong dream. For years, their small jewelry company, Candor Diamonds, has been struggling with its day-to-day earnings. But recently, Candor is suddenly flush with cash. The hard-working couple has finally made it big.
Irwin Margulies was a low-level jeweler in the Diamond District of New York. But after a very short period of time, sales were growing by leaps and bounds.
Suddenly, this company, which had been doing between $500,000 and maybe $1 million a year in business, was doing $5 million a year.
Irwin and Madeline Margulies have been married for over 8 years. And nearly all that time together has been spent trying to make Candor Diamonds into a success. Now, they are enjoying the fruits of their labor.
He had bought a new house in Westchester, and they had several very high-end cars. She had beautiful jewelry, and they took very, very lavish vacations.
They weren't shy about it. They weren't hiding the money under their pillowcases and pretending that this wasn't going on. They were flaunting their wealth.
Although the couple is reaping the rewards of their success, the credit for Candor Diamond's sudden turnaround doesn't rest exclusively with them. The company's financial upswing seems to accelerate with the arrival of a skilled new bookkeeper, Margaret Barbera.
After her arrival, they're a company that starts to gross much more money and makes them a greater player in the Diamond District.
Margaret Barbera is a 37-year-old accountant from Queens. And from the outside, she doesn't seem like a woman with the golden touch. But with little family and few friends, professional success is one of the only things Margaret devotes her time to.
Seems like she didn't really have any relationships in her life. She lived alone in Queens. Not the sort of lady that has a lot of acquaintances.
Margaret Barbera was a street tough kid that grew up in Queens and got to be pretty good in accounting. And from the looks of her, she was fairly normal, but she had her own agenda. She wanted to make something of herself.
And Margaret has made herself into a highly sought-after bookkeeper with a reputation for having a deft touch at making money. And Candor Diamonds is not the first business Margaret has turned around. Her previous work at other small companies rapidly transformed bottom lines from red to black.
Her history was actually an honor student and a very hardworking individual at work.
When Irwin Margulies finds out that Margaret's looking for a new job, he doesn't waste any time making her an offer.
Margaret Barbera was just what Irwin was looking for. And he hired her as his accountant.
After a very short period of time, Irwin saw that sales were growing by leaps and bounds. They calculated at one point that he was on a track to increase his sales by 40% in 1 year.
Irwin and Madeline Margulies make sure that Margaret is very well compensated for all her hard work, even doubling her salary over the course of a few years. They're also exceptionally generous with gifts like first-class vacations.
Her lifestyle was a little more lavish than you would have expected, and she had some really, like, fabulous trips abroad, and she had a very nice car, and her lifestyle belied a little bit the type of salary that she was making.
With business increasing, the couple also gives their talented bookkeeper another perk and hires her friend, Jenny Soo Chin, to work with Margaret.
Jenny Soo Chin has a little bit of an accounting background and goes to work as a friend of Margaret's.
Jenny helps Margaret keep the books balanced and the profits flowing in. But Jenny and Margaret aren't just co-workers and friends. They also share a secret that could become very dangerous to both of them. They are actually lovers.
Margaret Barbera was a loner, and she was missing the closeness of somebody in her life. And the two of them could compare stories, and they found a lot in common. And as a result, they became lovers.
She's a loner. She's a middle-aged woman. She lives out in Queens. She has very few friends. And somehow, Jenny Chin befriends her. And of course, I think she probably becomes very obsessed with her because there's nobody else, you know, in her life. She doesn't have any children. She never has any visitors. So Jenny is very important to her.
And working at Candor allows the lovers to spend time together and even travel as a couple.
She and Barbera had a romantic relationship. They'd go on to Europe together. They both worked in the same place.
The two women traveled together. They were best of friends, good friends. Who could ask for anything better?
Candor Diamond's success has given everyone involved with the company a chance to enjoy the good life. But not everything is as it seems to be on the surface. Margaret Barbera has secrets that could ruin many lives. Secrets powerful enough to drive someone to an unimaginable act of violence.
There must have been a tremendous amount of anger, a tremendous amount of rage.
Margaret Barbera has come a long way from her modest upbringing in Queens, New York. She's a highly skilled bookkeeper at a successful New York diamond business. And her love life is filled with romantic, exotic trips with her girlfriend, Jenny Soo Chin, who works with her. But they're both keeping a dangerous secret. Jenny Soo Chin isn't just Margaret Barbera's lover. She's also married. Jenny and her husband, Edward Chin, are well known in the Chinese community around New York City. And Edward is a true immigrant success story. He's made a fortune in banking and is well respected in the business world. But image is everything, and his wife's secret lesbian affair could ruin Edward Chin.
An affair is a secret, but this was a particularly potent secret because it involved something taboo, which is that they were having a lesbian affair. And if this was not something that was known to their community, to their family, it would have been a particularly important secret.
But Jenny and Margaret's forbidden adulterous affair isn't the only part of their lives that crosses dangerous boundaries. On the surface, Candor Diamonds, with Margaret Barbera's help, looks like a very healthy business. But its success story starts to seem too good to be true.
They're kind of a low-level, you know, jewelry company. And subsequent to her arrival, they seem to take on a really different role in the diamond district business.
The sudden upswing of Candor's fortunes has been so dramatic that it's raised the suspicion of federal regulators. The FBI is launching an investigation into the company. And the deeper they look, the more they believe that Margaret Barbera is behind whatever is going on at Candor Diamonds.
Because she's the accountant, she is clearly one of the suspects and could have been doing this on her own without other people knowing.
What financial investigators find when they start to examine Kander Diamond's spreadsheets looks like it could be a classic Ponzi scheme. The FBI discovers that Kander Diamond's isn't actually making any profits. It is simply taking out bank loans written against fake orders for diamonds. Kander then uses each of these loans as collateral to get the next loan from another bank.
So you borrow money against the invoices, and you're telling the person you're borrowing from that you have all these really legit customers who are going to give you back this money.
You pay old bills with new money, and to pull more off, he had to further expand the scheme.
It's a pyramid. It keeps going, keeps going, keeps going, and you can always pay back by the next loan.
And the person creating this elaborate paper trail is the bookkeeper with the magic touch, Margaret Barbera. She's the one applying for the loans and presenting banks with records of fraudulent income.
How did this happen? I mean, here was a woman who was an honor student. She did incredibly well at school.
But when the FBI looks more closely into her past, they find out Margaret has used some very creative accounting strategies at several of her former jobs.
Maybe through the various employments she had, someone asked her to cook the books a little, maybe just a little. And then the money started coming in. She somehow, almost like an addiction, she got hooked up and started to like the money, the easy money. Who's gonna know? People started to know that, hey, you wanna get your books cooked a little and you need someone who's a little corrupted, you know, let's get Margaret.
At Kander, it becomes apparent the Ponzi scheme is juggling millions of dollars of fake assets. Given the scope of the fraud, it seems unlikely Margaret Barbera is managing it alone. And right next to her all day long is her girlfriend and confidant, Jenny Soo Chin.
Margaret and Jenny could have been colluding and created the entire fraud. You have to have somebody you can trust if you're, you know, creating this kind of scheme. Jenny could be trusted.
The FBI reaches out to question Margaret Barbera, but she's not willing to talk. She knows she's covered her tracks and doesn't think there's any solid evidence that investigators can act on.
There's a belief that they're the smartest animal on the planet and nobody's gonna be able to catch them. They're just too smart.
But as the FBI increases the pressure on Margaret to tell all of Kander Diamond's financial secrets, a truly shocking event hits Margaret full force. Her girlfriend, Jenny Soo Chin, suddenly goes missing. Jenny's car is found abandoned, and the last place eyewitnesses can place her is at Margaret's apartment.
In January, she had disappeared, and nobody had heard a word from her. She was just gone, vanished.
Margaret Barbera is distraught. She becomes desperate to try to find her missing friend and lover.
She was frantic when Jenny Soo Chin was missing, working very, very hard to locate her, find out what had happened to her.
In fact, the only one who seems to be broken up about it is this Margaret Barbera, who was going around her neighborhood in Queens, posting missing persons flyers.
There are two secrets in Jenny's life that could have put her at risk, and they're the same secrets that Margaret Barbera has. Involvement in the questionable accounting scheme at Kander Diamonds, now under federal investigation, and a forbidden lesbian affair that could have ruined her husband, Edward Chin.
We simply don't know how this would have affected Edward Chin. It's a huge betrayal. Who is this person? Have they lied from the beginning? Were they ever attracted to me? It's like you didn't even know this person from the start.
There must have been a tremendous amount of anger, tremendous amount of rage.
Margaret Barbera's world is turning from an exciting success story into a cloud of secret threats. But no one could imagine how dangerous and violent her life was about to become.
If you get rid of anybody that's involved and knows the secret, then there's the chance of not losing your freedom and the money.
It's April 13th, 1982, and Jenny Soo Chin, bookkeeping assistant at Candor Diamonds, has been missing since January. In the 3 months that Jenny's been gone, Margaret Barbera has become more and more terrified that the secrets they shared are the reason for Jenny's disappearance. And now, a man taking an early morning walk on a downtown city street makes a terrible discovery.
When the man walked a little closer, he saw a leg of a woman sticking out. There was a body, female, clothed, missing two shoes.
He immediately calls the police, and when officers arrive, they do a quick examination of the scene. It appears as if the woman's been shot in the back of the head and then dumped in front of an old storefront.
I would imagine they thought it was some sort of gang or mob or drug hit because of the violent nature of it.
The victim has no identification on her. Could this be the missing Jenny Soo Chin? But when officers check with their station, they soon discover that she fits the description of a woman who has been abducted from a Manhattan parking lot just the day before. It was a shocking, brazen attack in the middle of a busy public area. And when four strangers tried to stop the abduction, three were shot and killed. The lone surviving witness tells police that the kidnapped woman was driven away in a van.
They were looking for a woman who, according to an eyewitness, was dressed similar to the way this woman was dressed. She matched the age basic description.
And one chilling detail helps police match up the two crimes. The woman being abducted lost both of her shoes when she was pulled into the van. And the victim lying dead at the storefront is missing both shoes.
He put the shoes on the body and they fit like Cinderella. And he said, "We got it."
The woman is 37-year-old Margaret Barbera, Candor Diamonds accountant. Police investigating the murder are at first completely stunned that a woman like Margaret has been attacked with this kind of extreme violence.
This type of victim is very unusual. This isn't a person who's living an inherently risky lifestyle.
To have a bullet in her head, well-dressed, downtown Manhattan, is unusual. Why would that happen?
Detectives search Margaret's apartment in the hopes of collecting any possible evidence. And there they find pictures of her with the still missing Jenny Soo Chin. Neighbors confirm the two women's relationship, and detectives soon discover that Jenny had been married while she was Margaret Barbera's lover.
This immediately creates a possible motive on the part of Edward Chin, because he is a spurned lover. Perhaps he recently found out that his wife is not only having an affair, but having an affair with a woman.
That Jenny's been missing for months is even more troubling, and investigators decide to bring in Edward Chin for questioning.
He did not seem particularly concerned that Margaret Barbera had been murdered. Did not seem overly concerned that his wife was missing. Very stoic, and raised questions as to what he knew that he was not telling.
Edward Chin's behavior certainly raises red flags for detectives. He claims he didn't know that Jenny and Margaret were having an affair. And although he hasn't seen Jenny in months, he doesn't seem to care about her whereabouts. To police, it's a very strange reaction, but one that might be explained by cultural differences.
Historically, there's a great level of mistrust in the immigrant communities between law enforcement and these immigrant communities. They don't want them to know what they're feeling or what's happening.
But detectives feel certain that if Edward had known about his wife's lesbian affair, he would have done everything he could to keep it a secret. He had a tremendous amount to lose in his community if the truth came out.
His family would probably ostracize him. People that he worked with in the Chinese community would be very suspect of him. they wouldn't trust him anymore. He would be hugely embarrassed. He would probably have to move, relocate, and start his life all over again.
Although he has a strong motive, police find no evidence that Edward Chin is involved in any crime. Witnesses can't place him at the scene of Margaret's abduction, and there are no signs of any violence in Jenny Sue Chin's disappearance.
There was no evidence that the investigation team found that could link Edward Chin to the murder.
Since they have no other suspects, detectives go back to the crime scene at the parking lot, hoping to unravel how Margaret's kidnapping was accomplished. Soon they come across something very suggestive. Records indicate that access to the parking lot was restricted.
Who had access to that parking lot? What was learned was that it was by monthly parking only. There was no hourly or daily parking, so you actually had to fill out an application in order to park there.
They found out that Margaret Barbera had bought a monthly parking space for her BMW. And at about the same time, a van had bought a parking space. And this van was in and out approximating the same times that Barbera was in and out.
And this van is the same type of vehicle that was last seen fleeing the garage with Margaret Barbera trapped inside. Detectives determine a man named Donald Nash rented the parking space. Nash is a building contractor with low-level connections to organized crime, and he's been a suspect in several robberies in the past.
The parker's name was Donald Nash. He lived in Keensburg, New Jersey. He began to be a person of interest that we thought may have done it.
Nash's movements in and out of the parking lot proved to be the clincher.
It showed that he was stalking her and that he was planning when the hit would work and if what he was doing was he was watching what she did every day. It was a huge stroke of luck.
But Nash's connection to the garage is still circumstantial. Detectives need more concrete evidence to tie Donald Nash to the crime. And they soon come up with a clever but unorthodox plan.
We did not have enough evidence to arrest him. We did not have enough evidence to search his van, but we weren't gonna let him slip through our fingers.
Because Nash had once listed his van as stolen and never told police that he'd gotten it back, officers now seize the vehicle as stolen property and conduct a thorough search. Inside his van, they find .22 caliber shell casings, the same type of bullet used to kill Margaret Barbera. Ballistic tests also reveal that Nash's gun was used in the murder.
They have their man, and they knew that Donald Nash was the killer, was the shooter. But why?
Donald Nash and Margaret don't seem to have ever met, and they have no clear connection to one another. Police theorize that someone must have contracted Nash to kill Margaret. But who could have wanted her dead so badly? Nash is arrested for Margaret's murder, but after hours of questioning, he still won't say a word about the crime to police.
If I told you once, I told you 1,000 times. I'm not talking.
Detectives were probably back to square one. He offered up no information that could be helpful.
In the organized crime world, there's nothing worse than being a rat. And by keeping your mouth shut and doing your time, some prestige goes along with it. Growing up in that environment, he lived the code.
All the circumstantial evidence said Nash. But Nash wasn't bright enough to have planned all this himself. So who hired Nash? And it came down to who had anything to gain by Margaret Barbera dying.
Investigators return to the possibility that Edward Chin, the wealthy husband of Margaret's lover, could be behind the execution.
Edward Chin had the means. There are people that could be contracted to do most anything you needed done if you had the money.
Certainly in murder investigations, the husband
is always looked at if the wife has been murdered or the wife has disappeared. But when all was said and done, there was no indication that he had anything to do with Margaret's murder.
Even though they have the trigger man, police still don't know who was behind Margaret Barbera's vicious execution. But the investigation is soon pushed in an entirely new direction. The FBI approaches homicide detectives and tells them that Margaret was being investigated for her role in an elaborate financial fraud. In fact, the Fed suggests that the secrets she knew about the Ponzi scheme at Candor Diamonds were a very good reason why Margaret may have been killed.
So the NYPD realized that there was a federal connection. The FBI realized that one of their key people in an embezzlement case was now dead.
When you're alive, you have lots of secrets that you can keep from everybody, and nobody knows your secrets. When you die, especially when you die a violent death, you don't have any more secrets. Your life is exposed to the world.
After looking deeper into Candor's books, FBI investigators have come to suspect that the Ponzi scheme had been going on for some time before Margaret Barbera arrived. Although Margaret certainly played a key role in expanding the fraud at Candor Diamonds, it seems very likely to investigators that the person originally behind this immense scam is Erwin Margulies, Candor's owner.
He wanted fancy cars, he wanted nice houses, he wanted nice things, he wanted to be able to travel. All of those things took money, and the kind of money that he was legitimately making from Candor Diamonds would not have supported that. So he thought creative bookkeeping would be a way to go to bring this about.
But white-collar crime is one thing. It's hard for investigators to imagine Margulies could be involved in anything like the extreme violence of Margaret Barbera's execution.
There's no history, criminal history, in Erwin. He has an upstanding life. He's part of a community. He runs a business. He's married. He has two children. He's not working in a violent side of the criminal world.
Margaret Barbera knew too many secrets about an elaborate financial scam. But who could have been willing to undertake murder for hire to keep her from talking?
He was offered immunity to tell what he knew, and he told what he knew.
After Margaret Barbera was kidnapped, then murdered by Donald Nash, a man she never met, the FBI reveals something startling. Margaret was under investigation in a multi-million dollar Ponzi scheme being run out of Candor Diamonds. But given the amount of money at stake, the feds believe the company's owner, Erwin Margulies, was in on it.
He was socially ambitious. He wanted fancy cars. He wanted nice houses. He wanted nice things. All of those things took money.
The FBI begins to put the pieces together. Erwin had been running the scheme for some time before he recruited Margaret to keep the company's books.
That's when he went looking for an accountant who could run several sets of books, a legal set, a set for the government, a real set, and could phony things up. And that's when he discovered Margaret Barbera. So he hired her, and she quickly knew exactly what he wanted, and she was very good at it.
Margaret's ability to make the books look correct offered Candor the facade of legitimacy it needed. Financial investigators believe that the bookkeeper and the diamond dealer reached an understanding that would bring them both a fortune in stolen profits.
This was a huge secret that Margaret would have wanted to keep under wraps for her own freedom, her liberty, not to mention her reputation.
But nothing stays secret forever. And eventually, the scale of the fraud going on at Candor Diamonds comes to the attention of authorities.
When you get greedy, mistakes happen. And so the bank finally realized that something isn't kosher for Irwin and Madeline.
6 months before her death, when bank auditors first arrive, Margaret refuses to answer any of their questions. But Irwin Margulies knows precisely what to tell the auditors.
He says, I don't know what you're talking about because I have this lady who does my books. I leave everything up to her, and she is doing these terrible things.
Irwin planned on pinning the whole scheme on Barbara. He had taken steps to show that she had stolen or embezzled from the company. And being the controller of the company, she was the one responsible for the scheme, and he knew nothing of it.
Once Margaret Barbera realizes she has been set up to be the fall guy, she understands that her only chance to escape jail is to cooperate with the FBI and provide them with evidence Irwin was running a Ponzi scheme. So she does just that.
I can give you all the information about everything. I have paper trail. I can show you how I did it. I can show you where all of the money is.
The FBI targeted Margaret Barbera to try to speak with her, and after numerous attempts, Margaret Barbera said, there's a fraud going on, and I will speak to you.
She was also not stupid. She was keeping a set of books for herself in case anybody got suspicious. And she, I think, realized very early that he was going to use her as a fall guy. And she was determined not to be the fall guy.
But before she can provide hard evidence to the FBI, Margaret's world comes crashing down. Her girlfriend Jenny turns up missing, and she fears she will be next.
At the time she came to us, she did not believe that her life was in danger. It wasn't until Jenny Suchin disappeared that her fears were raised.
You have to promise me that you're going to protect me because I'm scared.
Margaret never has time to give the FBI what they need to prosecute Irwin Margulies for the Ponzi scheme. She ends up dead on a New York City sidewalk before she can talk. Investigators are now almost certain that Irwin Margulies is behind Margaret Barbera's murder. But they have no way to tie him to the killing.
We have motive by Irwin. If Margaret Barbera is cooperating with the FBI against him. But we have nothing at that point to prove that Irwin hired Donald Nash to kill Margaret Barbera and Jenny Suchin.
And with Margaret Barbera's death, the police have no access to the real financial evidence of Irwin Margulies' role in the Ponzi scheme.
You have absolutely no proof that any of this happened.
The only thing that police know for certain is that Donald Nash is the man who abducted and shot Margaret Barbera. He's their only solid link to the person behind the crime.
We did ask you to do this.
He is ultimately just a hired hand. What they want is who is scheming and thinking of these ideas, because ultimately they can be the more dangerous in the long run.
Police pore over everything they know about Nash again, and something finally shakes loose.
He was out of control and probably paranoid, believing that everybody was out to get him.
The pyramid scheme at Candor Diamonds has finally been brought to light, and investigators feel certain that the man behind it, Irwin Margulies, ordered a hit on his bookkeeper, Margaret Barbera, to keep her from talking to the feds. But investigators still can't make a connection between Margulies and the trigger man, Donald Nash.
The physical evidence connects Nash to the murder, but the circumstantial evidence connects Irwin to the murder.
Nash is quickly tried and convicted in the deaths of Margaret Barbera and the three innocent bystanders who tried to come to her aid. He gets additional jail time for conspiring to murder Margaret's girlfriend, Jenny Suchin, who has still never been found. But even with life in prison hanging over his head, Nash never divulges his secret. Who hired him to kill Margaret and Jenny?
Well, Nash is a real professional. So they had to do a lot of good old-fashioned detective work to try and find some connections to go down and try and get some paperwork behind it.
Police go back over the evidence in Nash's file, looking for the smallest possible detail that might have been overlooked. Combing over his phone records, detectives find calls to a lawyer named Henry Oestreicher. It seems Oestreicher has one primary client, Erwin Margulies. Could Henry Oestreicher finally be the connection investigators have been looking for?
The connector seems to be Oestreicher. Two police detectives started following Oestreicher every day in a way that he knew he was being followed. The technique worked. They said, well, we think you're involved in these murders, and you have one chance. Either cooperate with us, or we're going to find a way to implicate you in the murders, and you're going to go to jail.
He was offered immunity to tell what he knew, and he told what he knew.
When it comes to the murder, all these bodies, everything was orchestrated by Mr. Margulies.
Oestreicher explains to authorities that when financial regulators first came to Margaret Barbera, saying that Erwin Margulies was trying to lay the Ponzi scheme solely on her, Margaret decided to fight back.
In her mind, she was seeking out to protect herself.
Margaret makes copies of the incriminating transactions, hides them in a secure location, and she tells Margulies exactly what she's done.
I want you to understand something very clearly. I have all of the information and all of the power to take you down.
By keeping copies of the cookbooks, she could prove that there was really no money in the company, and she could hold that over his head to prevent him from blaming her.
She said, you can't deal with me because I have all the records. You try to touch me, and the FBI will come down on you.
But Margaret has made a terrible miscalculation. By threatening to expose Erwin Margulies, she has given him a motive to kill her.
It was a very bad decision that she led on, that she had evidence that could put him away for a long time. Anytime you threaten to expose, let the other conspirators know that you have evidence against them, it's very dangerous.
He was out of control and probably paranoid, believing that everybody was out to get him.
And when Erwin eventually finds out that not only does Margaret have a paper trail to expose his fraud, but is cooperating with the FBI, he's ready to do anything to keep his secrets from being exposed.
He discovered that. I don't know how. Nobody knows how. But he got the word that she was testifying against him.
When you're a psychopath, you're not thinking straight. You're thinking, I can get through this. I'm not going to go to jail. I earned this money that I stole.
So Erwin calls his lawyer, Henry Oestreicher, into his office to discuss a solution that he thinks will solve all of his problems.
So he says to Henry Oestreicher, his friend, do you know people who do things so that people can stop talking?
We're gonna have to do something about her.
Erwin's plan is to kill both Margaret and Jenny and say they have disappeared with a fortune in his diamonds if anyone asks. With both women gone, no one will be able to prove his role in the scam.
Erwin Margulies decides if Margaret is out of the equation, he has the perfect fall guy. You do not get a more malicious, cold-hearted act than someone who will murder to create a defense that he may have to assert once his scheme is revealed.
Erwin is willing to kill two women he worked closely with, so his secrets stay hidden and all of Kander's money stays in his pocket.
There's a lot of rationalization that goes on in their mind that says, you know, I didn't really have any choices. This is the only thing I could do.
It's definitely a psychopathic type of person. They believe that they can pull off this same type of scam with violence that they did with just money.
When we look at Erwin's mind,
and we look at how that mind is working. Here I am successful. Here I have power. Here I have control.
There was most likely a disconnect between what actually was going to happen and what he wanted to keep going in his life. When an assassin or a hitman is hiring, it's not really a real thing. You're not really standing there and pulling the trigger. You're not doing the work yourself. He was probably very disconnected from the actual act and the idea of the act. He just wanted the problem to go away.
Soon the plan comes together. In addition to his legal practice, Henry Oestreicher also manages several buildings around New York. And one of his tenants is mob-connected contractor Donald Nash.
Oestreicher discovers that Donald needs money, and Donald may be willing to do things for money. So he sets up a meeting. Oestreicher introduces them, and he walks away and leaves them alone.
After Margulies and Nash meet, Jenny Soo Chin goes missing, and Margaret Barbera is kidnapped and murdered. Anyone that can connect Erwin Margulies to the Ponzi scheme is silenced forever.
When somebody starts with a scheme, they have to follow it through. It's kind of like psychopathic behavior. They start believing in the scheme themselves and live this scheme.
Facing accessory to murder charges, Oestreicher repeats his story to a jury. In return, the lawyer who helped set up the hit walks free. Oestreicher's testimony helps get Erwin Margulies life in prison for the deaths of Margaret Barbera and Jenny Soo Chin. And when Margaret's family eventually finds the set of falsified books that she had hidden away, Margulies is also convicted of financial fraud and tax evasion. His wife, Madeline, is sentenced to 3 years for her role in the Ponzi scheme.
We had connected all the dots. We had dealt with enormous political pressure, media pressure, and made it come out right. At the end of the day, after you've done that, you feel you've done your job.
For those who know the case, it's still unbelievable that people died to keep a financial secret, no matter how serious, from getting exposed.
Probably would have done 3 to 5 years in prison, as would his wife probably do 2 to 3. And they would have walked out the door at the end of that and tried to put their lives back together. It was the nature of the man and the psyche of the man that drove him to extreme measures to try to cover his tracks.
Margaret Barbera, Kander's brilliant bookkeeper, came a long way from her humble beginnings, but paid the ultimate price for her boundless ambition.
The tragedy is Margaret Barbera does not fit the profile that one would think would be killed execution style. She's a bright girl. She's an intelligent woman. But on one level, the American dream is to have money. When someone actually achieves that goal and has been striving to gain a higher income, to make more money, and they're faced with it, it is extremely intoxicating.
Jenny Chin's body is never found, and Edward Chin is never charged with any crime. Erwin Margulies dies in jail 3 years into his prison term, and his wife Madeline, after serving her short sentence, retires to Florida. 5 people brutally killed, and untold lives ruined, all to cover up one man's dirty secrets.
These kinds of secrets can destroy lives, destroy careers, destroy reputations.